courtside of the virtual hardwood, it's the Emerald Sea Podcast. This is episode 521. I'm Andrew, Andrew.forum, Andrew NLSC on X. With me as always, my co-host Derek, DP3NowForum, and DP3G and DP384 on X. Derek, how's it going, my friend? What's on your mind?
Better, Andrew, because I am walking again.
Excellent news.
So yeah, I spent, you know, the last 6 weeks on crutches, non-weight bearing, after I had surgery. And that surgery, as a reminder, was to reconstruct my ACL because I had a full rupture on January 3rd of this year during a local league game. And also part of that surgery was a femur plug because I also fractured my femur on that injury. But today was the first day without crutches. So obviously my walking gait isn't perfect. Obviously, I still have a little bit of a limp. I'm still walking around with the brace. But to ditch the crutches, Andrew, and free up my armpits, yeah, and just feel the freedom in general of being able to walk around and you know, we really take it for granted. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, over 40 days of not being able to do that, I really took walking for granted. You know, and then when I start jogging again, and then when I start running again, and then hopefully playing basketball again, you know, I think I'll just have a super appreciation for being able to do that.
Oh, no doubt. And that is, once again, excellent news. And it sounds like you're on track, at least. A good prognosis.
I've had no setbacks. And that's the goal moving forward. You know, all the way up to return to sport training, I just can't have any setbacks. However, something happened last Monday night that needs to be noted, and I feel so bad for him. I wish it had happened to my other knee. That's how much I love my brothers. But he was playing in a local league game, and I was at the game sitting on the bench with my crutches next to me because I hadn't started walking yet. And he was in the paint, and somebody backed into his left leg. And if you remember correctly, my injury was also to my left leg, which is why I could drive shortly after my injury and surgery and whatnot. But when they backed into his left leg, his kneecap dislocated. So he had like a patella dislocation. And we believe it was partial. We don't believe that it was a full dislocation. And so he went down hard. So he hit the court. And while he was sitting upright, he looked down at his leg and he saw the dislocation. So he used his left hand on the left-hand side of his knee and his right hand on the right side of his calf and put his knee back into place.
Ugh.
Just imagine the horror of that. When he first went down, he thought he broke his leg.
It feels gross just to hear. Like, dislocations are pretty gnarly, really.
Yeah, and you're normally not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be a medical professional. But in that moment, only thought,
yeah,
I have to straighten this thing out, and I have to play again. See, that, and that's my mindset too, because I almost went in after I ruptured my ACL, right? I looked at the guy who runs our team, and I was like, I'm thinking about going back in. So he put his knee back into place. He stood up and limped his way to the bench. And then, Andrew, he went back in the game and he tried to go up and down the floor, and just the stability was just not there. Like, he felt like his knee was going to continually fall out of place. So what he did, because this was a playoff game and they only had five guys, if he wasn't on the court, they would have had to play 4-on-5. So he stayed at the offensive end of the floor. My brother's a good shooter. He was shooting like 50% from three in this league and whatnot. And he stood in the corner and just didn't get back on defense. All he could do was stand up, right? He couldn't move. He couldn't move laterally. He couldn't pivot, et cetera. Played the whole rest of the game that way. I think the last 9 minutes of the game. Here's the part that sucks. They were up 36-31 on the number one team in the league in this playoff game when he got hurt. After he got hurt, that team went on a 22-0 run and they were up 53-36. And that's because they had to play 4-on-5 on defense.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah, you can't.
And obviously their offense fell apart too and whatnot after the injury. So they lost that playoff game. My brother was able to walk out to his car, drive home, etc. But he's not getting an MRI yet. What he's doing is he's wearing a knee immobilizer brace, and he is, you know, still going to the gym, doing his, you know, quad strength exercises, making sure he can make his leg as strong as possible without impacting the stability of it, you know, having setbacks, you know, still working out, you know, with his upper body, et cetera. So fingers crossed that he didn't have any severe ligament damage. It seems like his MCL was impacted, but hopefully not too, too bad. He's seen some improvement over the last few days and whatnot. But yeah, you know, myself and my brother with some serious knee injuries here in 2024.
Some terrible luck, obviously, and hopefully it isn't too bad. And it seems promising that he is getting around and going to the gym and so forth. But yeah, just what terrible luck. And, you know, with yours, you know, as you say, you have that moment whenever you have an injury. Even when I've been out with friends and I've stepped on an uneven part of the footpath, the sidewalk, and rolled my ankle, just in that moment, and that's nowhere near as serious as these injuries, obviously, but in that moment you think, oh, why did I step there? Why did that happen? You know, and it's just bad luck.
Well, we call this team in this league, Andrew, the 88-89 Pistons. And the reason is because this is by far the most physical team in the league and probably one of the most physical teams I've ever played against in my basketball life. They pressure you full court all game. They're constantly hitting you. If you go to the hoop, they are going to try to get under your body. They're a very dangerous team, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason why my brother hurt his knee in that specific game is because bodies were flying in the paint. Yeah. Right. People were being moved, and unfortunately one of those bodies went into his planted left leg. But you know what's funny, Andrew? We just had a knee injury in a virtual hardwood session on NBA 2K8 with Sean Livingston of the class of 2004 team. And it is eerie how realistic that was. It happened at the end of the first quarter. And Craig Sager, during the broadcast, states that it was an MCL injury with other possible ligament damage, so possibly other ligaments impacted. And I want to refresh people's memory on what happened with Sean Livingston. So on February 26, 2007, while landing awkwardly after a missed layup, Sean Livingston injured almost every part of his knee, tearing the ACL, PCL, and the lateral meniscus, while also spraining his MCL and dislocating his patella and his tibiofibular joint, all in that same injury. Right. So what happened on NBA 2K8 during that session was incredibly realistic and eerie. And like you stated, you know, after it happened, it's probably because in the video game, you know, his durability was probably low.
Yeah.
In his, you know, in his ratings and whatnot. But they interviewed Sean Livingston, and this is what he said about the injury. He said, "I dislocated my knee, tore 3 out of 4 of my ligaments in my knee. They basically compared it to a car crash. A lot of skiers have that kind of accident. And of course, they were talking about the whole amputation and all that. They threw that around early because of blood flow and all that."
That's
so think
wild.
About that.
That's crazy.
He went from them talking about amputating his leg at the knee to him coming back, not only being an NBA player again, but winning multiple championships with the Golden State Warriors as a key contributor, right? So that is just one, that might be the best comeback story of all time, if you really think about it, like as far as success after a serious injury like that. But anyways, Andrew and I were playing NBA 2K8, you know, the PS3 version. We were using the class of 2004 versus the class of 2005. And what happened, Andrew, in the fourth quarter with 1 minute to go with us up 59-56, I lost power. So we're having a snow/sleet storm here where I live, with high wind gusts, probably around 40 mile per hour wind gusts. And Andrew and I were cruising, you know, at the end of the game. We felt like we had the W. I was really excited to post that video to the NLSC YouTube. And I still might, actually, with a disclaimer in there, because the highlights were so good. And I lost power with 1 minute to go in the fourth, and that game got ruined.
Yeah, you know, we've all had that moment with games where we've rage quit, where something hasn't been going very well, and we've just, okay, I'm just going to start over, or I'm just going to play something else for a while. That's one of the first times I've seen the CPU rage quit. I'm just going to say that the CPU did that. But yeah, that was a bummer, obviously. We did have some great momentum there going at the end of the game. The highlights were just really starting to flow, enjoying that session. So that was a downer, but yeah, just an unfortunate situation with the storms you're having. But 2K8 is a game that I've been playing for the past week, and I've enjoyed 2K6, as I've said before. It's retroactively become one of my favorites. 2K7 I've quite enjoyed as well. 2K8 has left me feeling cold when I've been playing it. It hasn't really captured my imagination, the dribbling moves. I haven't enjoyed that. I mean, I don't like the isomotion, the original isomotion, as much as Freestyle to begin with. It just doesn't feel right compared to 2K6 and 2K7. I do love the signature moves that they added that year. It does feel like there's a bit of a balance issue with the CPU. They'll just make every single jump shot. And it was happening to us as well. They made some pretty cheesy jump shots over some pretty good defense.
Danny Granger was killing us.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, Granger was a fine player, became a fine player, and then injuries took him out as well. People do forget about Granger because Paul George, who also had a gruesome injury. Paul George and Sean Livingston, those are the injuries you don't look up on YouTube. They are very gruesome indeed. But 2K8, sort of feeling a bit cold towards it, not really getting into it, but intrigued by it. Because I can tell that it is a well-made game, but I'm just not enjoying it. So I said to you, I suggested we play before we record today, and you were keen as always, and I suggested 2K8, because I want to play this game co-op. As you've said before, Derek, it really changes the game when you play it with another human being. So let's give this a go, co-op. And it was definitely a better session playing with you than just solo against the CPU, but I did notice those same issues with balance.
Yeah, so the computer will never throw that lob that I threw to you from Ben Gordon to Josh Smith.
Exactly.
On alley-oop. It will never, and even if they throw it, it won't be timed the same as, you know, if a human was controlling, you know, Ben Gordon in that case. So yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think shared experience is pretty much 100% of the time beat, you know, human versus CPU and whatnot. I want to point something out. My biggest issue with NBA 2K8 gameplay by far is that every single direction you go with the ball, you're being dragged. Mm. Like if I try to go right, the defender I'm stuck to my defender, right? If I try to go left, I'm absolutely stuck to my defender. We talk about suction with NBA 2K24. Suction is definitely an issue with NBA 2K8, and it makes, you know, drives to the hoop, moves on the perimeter, just feels kind of blah in comparison to many other NBA 2K titles that were created around that time.
But like, you don't have that. Have you noticed that the CPU is able to get away from us much easier, and it doesn't stick to us?
It does seem a little bit unfair.
Yeah.
As far as how, you know, what the CPU's privileges are with their movement in compared to yours. But I want to paint this picture for people. So class of 2004, you know, everybody talks about the class of 2003 because of Wade, Bosch, and in LeBron. And obviously Darko was part of the class of 2003 as well. And, you know, yeah, and they had Kendrick Perkins as well. But there were some other really strong players in that, you know, class of 2003. Josh Howard, who was on a couple of those excellent Mavericks teams, including the year where Dirk won MVP and they lost to Golden State in that first round. They also had Kirk Heinrich, one of my favorite players of all time, as yours as well. Leandro Barbosa, who was also part of that Golden State Warriors championship run, you know, with Sean Livingston. They had TJ Ford, a short NBA career, but he was excellent in NBA 2K7, Andrew. He's a 2K7 legend and a video game legend as a result. But David West was also part of that class of 2003, and so was Chris Kaman. So they, there were other really good players that came out of that draft class. It wasn't just Wade, LeBron, and Melo, and, you know, and Chris Bosh. that class is the logical choice to put on the floor when you're playing NBA 2K8. So we tried to switch it up. We used the 2004 draft class, and I think this draft class gets forgotten because of the strength of that 2003 class. But, you know, we had Dwight Howard, Al Jefferson, who ended up being basically, you know, almost a 20-10 player later in his career. Emeka Okafor for rim protection. Luol Deng, who's part of some of your favorite Bulls teams in history. Josh Smith, obviously high-flying dunker, you know, good on the boards, high steals and blocks. Just an excellent player. Never an all-star, though, Andrew. You and I probably would have put money on him being an all-star, you know, before we looked it up, because I swore in my memory that Josh Smith was an all-star at one point, but he never was.
Same. Weird.
He had numbers that would have made him an all-star. And he was on some good Hawks teams too, right? Like some winning teams. Class of 2004 also had Andre Iguodala, Kevin Martin, who averaged 20 points per game at a point in his career. Ben Gordon, who's possibly your favorite player of all time outside of Michael Jordan. Devin Harris, who averaged 20 points per game for the Nets. Jameer Nelson, obviously memorable for being on that Orlando Magic Finals team with Dwight Howard. And Sean Livingston, who we talked about earlier. But there are some really, really good players that came out of that, you know, class of 2004.
Overshadowed by the class of 2003, as you said. And Iguodala, obviously a finals MVP, coming through big when he was inserted into the starting lineup in the 2015 finals. People debate whether LeBron should have got the finals MVP because of his numbers in that loss. And certainly he was carrying the Cavs with Kyrie and Kevin Love out of action. But Iguodala was the difference maker in that series. Absolutely well earned. And it's kind of nice, actually, Derek, when you see those unorthodox finals MVPs, like a Cedric Cornbread Maxwell in the 81 finals. Larry Bird, obviously already a fantastic player, but when you have that player that steps up and really makes that difference, it's not out of bounds.
Iguodala, also a member of some memorable Sixers teams with, you know, Allen Iverson and Kyle Korver and even Chris Webber in, you know, the second half of 04-05 and 05-06. So those are some really fun video game teams. They didn't really go anywhere, right? Like the Sixers were not a super strong team in the East at that time, but really fun video game teams. And you and I are going to disagree there. I absolutely don't think he deserved finals MVP in 2015. I think that Steph Curry absolutely should have won it. He put that Warriors team on his back and was just, he was the most valuable in that series, in my opinion. However, it is nice to see that Iguodala was awarded for his defense, right? Because people often forget that side of the ball, right? Yeah. Because everybody loves points. They love offensive numbers, all of that stuff. Defense rarely gets the credit that it deserves. So I think that that was a good look, you know, for him at that time. But we played against the class of 2005, Andrew, and this is a strange draft class, which I think, I don't know, I think overall it was just very top heavy because you had Chris Paul and Deron Williams, which they were in discussion for a couple of the best point guards in the league in the mid late 2000s, and they were often compared to each other.
Oh,
right?
People forget about D-Will. Absolutely, yeah.
Deron Williams, yeah, that conversation was real. And then there was also Monta Ellis on this team, a two-time All-Star David Lee, one-time All-Star Danny Granger. And then Raymond Felton was on that team. And it was just a little bit of a kind of a drop-off here. So like I said, Raymond Felton, you know, Charlie Villanueva, Andrew Bogut, Luther Head, Channing Frye, Marvin Williams, and Andrew Bynum. And I think Bynum overall, in my opinion, was kind of overrated. That's always been my opinion on Andrew Bynum with, you know, with his years with the Lakers. I think that, you know, in a way, just kind of like Kendrick Perkins on the Celtics, he was kind of allowed to thrive by not being somebody that they paid a lot of attention to when he had the ball or like on the offensive end in general. He was in a perfect position to, you know, really focus on his strengths as a player, and his weaknesses weren't, you know, as much on the radar as a result of the team, because of the team he was playing with. So he was able to focus on, you know, true rim protection, using his body in the paint, screen setting, you know, et cetera. But I think that Andrew Bynum and Kendrick Perkins are overall, they were just good pieces on good teams, and they weren't excellent players by any stretch. But yeah, that's kind of a fall off on the, I think 2005 is, the class of 2005 is top heavy.
I agree. And look, Bynum, I would say, is a better, more skilled player than Perkins, but I think that yeah, but I do think that is an apt comparison, that he was an all-star, I think, once. I believe his second to last year in the league, his last year with the Lakers, or last full season with the Lakers anyway, he was that an all-star. But yeah, he sort of never really blossomed into, like, a Dwight Howard, for example. People forget how good Dwight Howard was in his prime, before that back injury, and even afterwards, still a pretty good player. And as for Chris Paul was just carving us up, getting to the hoop, and he, of course, was the cover player for 2K8. And it's, I mean, it's not as fun when it's against you, but it is fun to see the cover player playing well in their own game.
Oh, no, absolutely. He had a couple of nice drives to the hoop on us, floaters, and he also had like a 360 layup on contact, which looked really cool. And I'll have to share that highlight on social media. But for us, the star was Josh Smith, and he caught two alley-oops and windmilled both of them in. He had another double pump two-handed jam in traffic, and I believe that was at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and also a couple post fadeaways, etc., because Josh Smith was very versatile, and it's what makes him super fun to use in video games. His ability to, you know, hit threes, step out in the mid-range, his ability to post up, his ability to, you know, slash, his shot blocking ability, his overall athleticism. He's just really fun to use in video games. And also, I know you were happy to see me cooking with Ben Gordon.
Definitely.
Using some of those one-on-one moves in that game to create separation and, you know, shooting up over the defense. They did a great job in that game with his shot animation, so it really looks like he's rising up like he did in real life. And I do want to point out that when NBA 2K8 was released, signature shot animations were still in their infancy, and it was still really cool to see them. Right? Because those only started really being put in basketball video games around NBA 2K6, 2K7, right? Like, that's when signature shots started infiltrating basketball video games.
Still novelty at the time. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, like, when I passed it to the wing in the first quarter and I caught it with Kevin Martin in that super ugly shot, how he averaged 20 points per game with that super ugly shot, I'll never know. You know, being a three-point shooter and whatnot. But they have his super ugly shot animation in that game. It looks perfect, just as ugly as it should be. And obviously, I was hitting everything with him at the beginning of the game because he was an excellent shooter. But it is really cool to see all those signature shot animations. And at the time, when those were being implemented in the game, it was groundbreaking, because when you play games like the older 2Ks or NBA Live 2003, Live 2004, etc., everybody has the exact same shot animation.
Exactly. And that was a selling point for 2K8. It does say it on the box that they are going for these improvements to signature animations. There's even some signature celebrations as well. I was just shooting around with the 90s All-Stars in practice mode there, and I was dunking with Shaq, and he actually does the walk-off and looking at his hand, and there's also, he has two actually, he has that one where he goes up and dunks and walks off looking at his hand. You can see that animation also in the introduction for 2K12, if people are having trouble picturing that. And the other one is when he dunks and he kind of shimmies off and kneels down in prayer. It's actually the same animation you see in NBA Playgrounds, the first NBA Playgrounds. So that's another Shaq signature celebration there. So those kinds of signature animations, that kind of personalization, that kind of authenticity really was pushing the series forward. I do wish it had better dribbling mechanics. I do wish that it was a little bit better balanced, although I haven't tried playing around with the sliders as of yet. But, you know, I am warming up to the game. That session definitely helped in that regard. So I will spend a bit more time with that one, because that is one of the ones on the list to cover for Way Back Wednesday, obviously. But yeah, it definitely helped playing with you.
Yeah, shared experience will always be better. I also want to point out, before we get to the mailbag and our main topic, the class of 2001 is often forgotten as well. And there are quite a few really good players that came out of that draft class. Listen to this. Gilbert Arenas, Pau Gasol, Tony Parker, Joe Johnson, Zach Randolph, Mehmet Okur, Gerald Wallace, Jason Richardson, Tyson Chandler, Richard Jefferson, Shane Battier, and one of your favorite players, legend Eddie Curry. Just kidding. It's not one of Andrew's favorite players. Not a memorable draft pick there. But you have some all-stars in there, NBA champions, you know, Tony Parker, Pau Gasol, ridiculous scorers like Joe Johnson, Zach Randolph. I mean, like, there's, you know, dunk contest champ Jason Richardson. You have a lot of talent there in the class of 2001.
You do, and it was a nice turnaround after the class of 2000, which again had a couple of good players, obviously. Kenyon Martin, Mike Miller.
Michael Redd, Jamal Crawford.
Of course, Chris Mann.
Yeah, Darius Miles, but throw Miles Swift. But there were definitely, 2001 is definitely a big jump.
It is superior, from the class of 2000. Absolutely. And I also, just to throw it out there, I often forget that Zach Randolph went to college. For a long time, I had a false memory of him coming straight out of high school, but he did go to Michigan State.
There you go. So there's the school of Magic Johnson.
Before we go on, a reminder that the NLSC podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, mb-live.com, as well as our YouTube channel. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast apps. If you're listening on any of those apps, we'd greatly appreciate a review. To keep up with the show and everything we're doing with basketball gaming in general, connect with us on social media. On Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. We also have an Instagram, NLSC Basketball, and on YouTube, we're youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. Once again, visit us at NBA-live.com, where in addition to the podcast, you'll also find all of our original content, as well as our forum and modding community.
So, Andrew, for our main topic today, I asked the community, if a basketball game was released with no NBA license but had solid gameplay and these options, create players and teams, uniform, stadium, and court creator, community upload downloadability, and deep franchise customization, and was priced at $39.99, would you be interested? And I got to tell you, people have been awesome about interacting with the mailbag over the last few weeks. This post on X, formerly Twitter, has close to 10,000 views at this point. It has around 100 likes and I believe 37 replies, 14 different quote tweets, etc. So people have been interacting with the mailbag, and I absolutely love it. People want to talk about basketball gaming on a deeper level like this. You know, they want to talk about, you know, possible options outside of NBA 2K. They want to talk about, you know, the past titles, the modes, all of that stuff. You know, they want to talk about their favorite gameplay moments and whatnot. It's just been really cool to see the interaction.
It has been. And look, I've got to give you credit for coming through with these great topics each and every week, because that is the initiative that you've spearheaded with the NLC podcast. And it is very heartening to see people like us, Derek, actually caring that much about basketball gaming, having that interest and wanting to talk about it in a deeper way, as you say. And we've said it before, there is definitely interest in alternatives in the space. People would like to see Live come back, or Sony's NBA series come back, Jam, Street, etc. And of course, college basketball, this being March Madness, we have to acknowledge that there is a lot of interest in a college basketball game coming back. EA Sports is obviously bringing back the college football games. But yeah, definitely an interest in an unlicensed game. And it certainly piques my interest, Derek, because what was one of my favorite games growing up? World League Basketball for the Super Nintendo. That is the PAL version of an NCAA game, admittedly. But none of the players are real. It's just the names of the developers and other names that they've grabbed, obviously, from... actually, the NCAA game, they've just moved those players and teams around and rebranded that as that fictional Global Basketball League. But it was so much fun. You just created these scenarios with these fictional players. It encouraged you to use your imagination. You weren't worried about, oh, this player shouldn't be doing that, or this player shouldn't be averaging this many points, or whatever, or they shouldn't be shooting that well. It was just a very pure virtual basketball experience. Now, obviously, there is a great draw to the NBA, and there are downsides to this idea, and we will get into that, and some of the responses pointed out issues as well. But I would absolutely love a game like this where you can customize it, which you couldn't do with World League Basketball, obviously, but you could customize it, or you could maybe generate names and play with these fictional teams. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and like you said, you couldn't customize World League Basketball, right? Like, you couldn't create players, create teams, etc. That is the big draw to my idea here. And I want to go over that again, because I want to give you an idea of what you could create with this type of game. So, like I said, create players and teams, uniform stadium and court creator, community upload downloadability, and deep franchise customization. So think about a video game that had almost unlimited create a player ability. So it created basically as many players as you want, that had the ability to create as many teams as you wanted, or at least enough to make rosters with, you know, the ability to create jerseys, create stadiums, create the courts, you know, create Dornas, all of that stuff. Imagine you had that ability, and then you could share those uploads with the community. So you could make EuroLeague, FIBA, AAU, high school mods, you know, college mods, class of mods, like we were just talking about, you know, class of 2000, 2001, 2002, et cetera, ABA mods, retro seasons, you know, all-time teams, you know, classic teams, street ball mods, big three mods, and one mods. Like, the opportunities would be endless. And you got to think about it. What keeps people on these games often the most? The ability to create, right? The ability to customize, the ability to share. So I think that once people got their hands on a game like this, as long as the gameplay was strong and, you know, and solid and whatnot, and they started, you know, creating these NBA mods, these and this could be on console too, like I stated, that's part of this scenario, you know, on console and on PC. These are like in-game tools that people could use, and they could upload their work to like a server and whatnot for people to download. But imagine the possibilities with this. And I want to use examples like Maximum Football and Access Football that are out there. The biggest weakness in those two games, it has nothing to do with customization. It has nothing to do with even franchise depth or anything like that. What it has to do with those games is very poor overall gameplay, poor gameplay physics, right? I think like the animations are janky. The graphics aren't what people want them to be. They're more along the lines of like kind of a mixture between like PS2 and PS3 quality and whatnot. And that's because those studios, and it's not a knock on them, but they are very small.
The budget, right? Is not there. Yeah, exactly.
Budget is not there. They probably can't get more people to work on their game. They're indie developers and whatnot. In my scenario, which is why I said the game would be priced at $39.99, because I believe that is reasonable for a game with PS4 style graphics, you know, with that solid gameplay and the type of customization that I brought forward, I think that $39.99 would be worth it for that type of game, and hopefully would allow them, as long as they could market it well and sell it well, would allow them to get more people on the game, you know, maybe better tech that they could use, and, you know, possibly hit the ground running in making it also a visually appealing game to go along with that solid gameplay and the proper physics and whatnot. But there's so much, Andrew, that could be done with a game like this. I do think it could be a hit if they were able to, you know, do proper online connectivity. So like people be able to, you know, easily connect with each other, play games and whatnot. You know, if they did have possibly a career mode, like a decently deep career mode, etc. And, you know, obviously there would be it would need to be a strong indie developer or, you know, a bigger company that put out a game like this. But I do think it could be a hit.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously has to impress from a gameplay standpoint. It does need to be fairly impressive visually. I mean, you and I will very readily play older games that do have dated graphics. They were great in their time, they are dated now. That is not a concern when the gameplay experience is so enjoyable. But obviously you do need to capture people's attention, it needs to impress, it can't look like an Incredibasketball, for example. It can't look a couple of generations behind, or it's not really going to get that traction. But if it can get that traction, if it can get that modding community that is making these total conversions for the game, that is allowing us to reskin the game however we like, then it's definitely going to draw some interest. And we can see that there are people clearly interested from the responses. Not everybody. Not everybody wants an unlicensed game. Not everybody is confident that it would sell. And those are valid concerns and a valid position to have. But no, I think it could be a lot of fun, as I said. And if you do have that community rallying around it, making that content, and it has that on-court experience that people are saying, oh, you know, it doesn't have the NBA license, but this may be one of the most fun basketball games available, then it definitely can gain traction.
Not only that, when those reskin NBA mods are created in this scenario, when those college mods are created and that content hits YouTube, right? It hits social media. People put up gameplay videos. They tell you what rosters you need to download, all of that stuff. That would absolutely take off. I have absolutely no doubt that it would take off. I think that's how hungry people are for an alternative at this point. And part of that pose is me hoping that somebody jumps on this, right? Possibly they see the post on X, formerly known as Twitter, and they say, hey, this is a great idea. I'm a developer. Let's get a team on this, right? Because I don't have the capacity to do something like this or try something like this right now. But I do know that if it was made properly, deep down, that I think it would be a hit. And Tillhouse, you know, he responded under my post, and he's a 2K Next maker, but also an EA content creator, Andrew. So he does, I think, content for both. He stated, community as a whole wouldn't give it time to be great, honestly. The game wouldn't release super polished based on how most games are released now. And the only thing fans would do is compare it. And I'm going to go back to what I said about Maximum Football and Axis Football. The problem with those games isn't the customization. The problem is the gameplay is not polished, right? The gameplay is super rough. The graphics are also rough in comparison to modern titles. So I think his comment is mostly based on that. Attempts we've seen in the sports gaming space by indie developers in the past, those games were just not polished enough to gain traction, gain a huge, you know, player base, and gain the momentum they need in order to either create a new game in that series or compete, you know, with some of the AAA games. I would hope that a AAA company would come forward at some point and try out my scenario. But, you know, he stated community as a whole wouldn't give it time to be great. Honestly, I understand the skepticism there. Where I disagree is that if the game showed promise early on and it was marketed appropriately and people jumped on those roster creations, those mods, all of that stuff right out of the gate, I think it could make a really, really big splash.
Do you think maybe it would be wise to do what Josh and Dave did? Josh and Dave of Nemo Gamer, of course, who made Basketball Classics, how they released Basketball Classics through early access on Steam. Maybe you bring back the old shareware demo model from the 90s, the classic era of shareware on PC, and you could do that on console as well with digital downloads, obviously, these days. Do you think maybe that would get people to give the game a chance in early access and then get some traction that way?
I think there's a benefit to it as long as it's executed properly. I think one of the problems is I've played many early access games on Steam, and I'd say maybe half of them, Andrew, maybe a little bit more, weren't ready for early access yet.
Too early access.
Too many. Yeah, exactly. You know, too many bugs, not enough features, not enough true gameplay time. You know, just a lot. And this is not just for sports games. like there's been many tennis games that hit early access, which were super blah from an animation perspective. Online wasn't ready, all of that stuff. But, you know, adventure games, RPGs, MMORPGs, racing games, like, you go down the list, and I think that there's some developers who have timelines that they're trying to hit, and in turn, they put something on early access too early, and it turns off the audience, right? And some of those people aren't going to want to revisit that game. Maybe they'll end up returning that game. The buzz isn't going to be there because when a game hits early access, Andrew, it's fair game. You can record that footage, right?
Of course.
And that footage then goes up on social media. And then what do people say sometimes? Oh, this is trash, or this is not what I was expecting.
Exactly.
Or, you know, why would I play this when I have this? Etc. So it would have to be executed incredibly well. The modes would have to be available. The, you know, the online component would have to be available. The customization, again, would have to be available. And it can't have too many bugs. I think that I want to stress this too. I said PS4 graphics at a $39.99 price. And I do think that that's reasonable. But with sports games, I don't think in 2024 you can get away with much less than PS4 graphics. I think you would agree. In order to make a serious splash, unless the gameplay, if it was a PS3 graphic type of deal, unless the gameplay was that good, that strong, it showed out really, really well on YouTube, you know, on social media in general. And I think I love PS3 graphics. I think you would agree, right? Like they're really good on, you know, I like the 2K's graphics on there. I like, you know, games like Skyrim, how beautiful of a game is Skyrim. And there's so many different great games that had great graphics on that system. But again, we're looking at, you know, what the younger crowd is going to get into and what they, you know, their first impression of the game when they see it on YouTube. And like to Tillhouse's point, what are they comparing it to, right? Are they're going to be comparing it to it at minimum, probably the PS4 generation of 2K's and Lives. But you can't go, you know, if you're from a graphics perspective, if you made a game like this, you can't go cheap on the crowd, right? Like on the atmosphere. You can't go cheap on the, you know, the little things. Like you got to have reflections in your game, you got to have shadows, you got to have, you know, stuff that, you know, a sports title in 2024 should have.
Realistic faces, that Unreal absolutely Engine, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I know that Unreal Engine is accessible to everybody, and I know that Unreal Engine can produce all of this. I think that it just takes somebody motivated to make a fully customizable, fun basketball video game. And I think that that person would need to build a team of other passionate devs, other people that, you know, truly want to make a great basketball game. And, you know, I think that something like that could happen. I also want to point out that generated names would be a great idea, but even in a game like this, Andrew, you could put a story behind it, right? Like you could still have a base story and memorable players and characters in a game like this. It doesn't have to be just random generated names. You could, you know, build a story and a profile around like some random name that's in the game. There's different ways you could attack this, but I would love to see somebody try it.
Same. And you're right. You do need to impress with the gameplay and graphics, as we said. You couldn't really go too far back with it unless you're going kind of stylized, like NBA Jam on Fire Edition or even an NBA Playground. You're going for that kind of action figure look where it's not totally accurate. It's kind of cartoonish in a good way, obviously. And yes, with early access, if it's clear that it's too early, that it doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere. I mean, that was the great thing about Basketball Classics, is that from the moment I played that, that yes, there was still more depth to come from roster editing to the season mode that they added. But from the very beginning, I said, this is like Double Dribble, but better, and with some modern conveniences. It was impressive right away. I knew that once they added that stuff, once Josh and Dave added all the things that they were imagining, it was going to be fantastic. And it absolutely is. Once it hit version 1.0, it was a tremendous retro-style game. And of course, if you are doing that retro-style, you can go back to 8-bit, 16-bit graphics, sprites,
exactly.
Whatever.
But well, that's a niche. That's a niche.
Exactly. Yeah.
A segment in the, you know, in the sports gaming space, and even in the, like, the indie gaming space, but at the same time, we need those games too, right? My proposal, you know, my scenario is more along the lines of something that can actually take a big market share in the basketball gaming space and be popular alongside NBA 2K, something like a 5-on-5 sim style game.
For
Now, I
sure.
also want to point out, though, you brought up, you know, more cartoon style, right? There's a market for that. And if
Definitely.
the game plays incredibly well, because you got to think too, NBA Street Volume 2, that is not sim art style. If
It's
you look at
stylized,
the
yeah.
way it's a style, exactly, the characters are stylized, but it doesn't feel any less like you're using Michael Jordan, right? Or, you know, you're any less that you're using Magic Johnson, or on the regular teams that you're using Stromile Swift and stuff. Like, you can still make it look like them,
For
but
sure.
it's in a more cartoon fun style. So if you didn't want to make a PS4 style game, right, but you wanted to have smooth animations and, you know, use maybe an older type of engine or something like that to create, you know, a more cartoon look, but with all the same customization, great gameplay, it can be played like a sim. I think that could be a huge, huge hit as well. So that was a good point. Yeah, I think that that's also an option.
And I know we're talking about an unlicensed game here, so in theory, no real players, unless they are created with the customization features or possibly externally modded on PC. But I was thinking back to All-Pro Football 2K8, when 2K lost the license, and they included some legends not on their real teams, and controversially, OJ Simpson was in that game. But if this game could license a few legends, your Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, some of your legends that show up in every game. Jordan is probably off limits. He's probably a 2K exclusive. But if they could add some legends in there in a legends pool, would that also be a way to sell a game, do you think?
Well, if you remember correctly, Maximum Football tried something like this, and it definitely drummed up some excitement. So if you remember, it was Maximum Football, and then it was, I think, Doug Flutie's Maximum Football. So Doug
Ah.
Flutie, obviously, quarterback legend, right? I don't think they have him helping promote the game anymore. But when Doug Flutie came on board for them, there were more comments on social media, more people looking in on the game, more people checking the progress, et cetera. So if you had something along the lines, you know, like back in the day, like you had David Robinson, Supreme Court,
Slam and
right?
jam, yeah.
Right. Stuff like that, right? But that game with David Robinson was absolutely filled with fake players, right? So I think if you did something along the line, it would have to be a big name or a big legend. Like if you put one of the big name NBA players in there before the game's title, it could definitely help with the promotion of it. But then you also then draw in the disappointment of this is, you know, there's no real players
Sure.
in this game. And then people start saying, you know, why is Luka Doncic or whoever, you know, the face of this basketball game, yet they don't have the NBA license and there's no real NBA players in it. So I think that's a conversation that obviously the devs in suits for the game would need to have. But, you know, that has worked in the past. I'll say again, though, the problem with games like Maximum Football and Axis Football, it has absolutely nothing to do with the goals of the developers, right? To make like a sim football game. It has nothing to do with them not loading the games with unbelievable customization, you know, the ability to create teams, players, your own league, you know, edit helmets, edit jerseys, all of that stuff. It has nothing to do with the customization. It has to do with the janky, underdeveloped, rough gameplay. That's what the turnoff is. It doesn't show well. And in 2024, these games need to show well.
They do, absolutely. And of course, that's always been the way. I mean, those mediocre titles never did as well as your NBA Lives and later NBA 2Ks, or even some of your other series, Inside Drive, Shootout, etc. The one-off games, as you said, the Michael Jordans in Flight, David Robinson Supreme Court. Well, NBA Action 95 starring David Robinson did have NBA rosters, but it was not on par with Live and a couple of the other games of the time. Jam, obviously. So yeah, it at the end of the day, it does need to impress on the sticks, and that is something that everybody has said. Everybody who's basically said they are interested in this game has stated the obvious, that it does need to be a solid game, because that is what it's going to have going for it, that it will be this incredible basketball game that we're saying, oh, it doesn't have the license, yet this may be the best basketball game on the market. And again, that's a very intriguing prospect.
It really is. And I want to point out too that $39.99 in my scenario would be a flat price. There wouldn't be any DLC, right? Like there's no microtransactions in
Oh, I would
this
have paid
game
more.
is I know you do. I know.
Yeah.
I want to point something out though. So there was an article about the game Baldur's Gate 3. And in that article, it states Baldur's Gate 3 made more than $650 million last year, proving video games don't need microtransactions to succeed. It's and that's all of that $650 million was made on Steam. Baldur's Gate 3 outsold the runner-up Hogwarts Legacy by more than double. And as this article states, games that don't rely on microtransactions, in fact, dominated the bestsellers list for 2023. And in this Baldur's Gate 3 game, they have a pop-up that shows up and it says, "Are there any in-game purchases?" And it says, "No, there are no in-game purchases in our game. We believe in providing a complete and immersive gaming experience without the need for additional purchases. Enjoy the game to its fullest without any additional costs or microtransactions." So that is telling, Andrew. Like I said, I don't think, and you and I have stood on this, by the way, since this discussion began years ago. We do not believe that microtransactions and games loaded with DLC are necessary in order for companies to make profit, right?
Not at all,
These
no.
games and the most popular games basically in 2023, some of the best-selling games had absolutely no microtransactions in them, and the game's base price was not more than their competitors. And the reason why this got brought up and there was a light shined on this issue just this last couple of weeks is because Dragon's Dogma 2 came out, and there is a laundry list of DLC that you can buy. And people were showing the screenshots from the Steam page for things like simple things like fast travel, right? Or to like create a second character, or et cetera. And some people were pointing out, well, yeah, you can do this, a lot of these things in the game while you progress, right? But that's not the point. The company is advertising all of this downloadable content to the tune of $40 or $50 over the price of the base game in order to get as much money out of consumers as possible. And they make some of these items, from what I'm reading, hard to get in the game, which will what? What will that do? That'll make a consumer, an impatient consumer who maybe doesn't have time to grind for these things or wait for them to go back to the Steam page and buy that downloadable content.
Sounds familiar.
So,
Sounds very familiar, actually.
sounds very familiar. I haven't. I love the original Dragon's Dogma. Obviously, we didn't have to worry about that on, that game. I own it for the console and for PC. But yeah, that's telling about Baldur's Gate 3. And again, it reaffirms what we've said in the past.
WWE 2K for many years now has made their roster editor to edit the default superstars, the default wrestlers, has been DLC. You can create your own, obviously, and the DLC packs also include new moves, as well as wrestlers, obviously. Can you imagine if we had to pay for roster updates and new animations being added in NBA 2K? I almost don't want to bring it up because
That
it's
might happen next. Yeah, that might be
speaking into
next.
existence when I don't want to. Absolutely. But you can
Right.
see that kind of greedy approach is already there in AAA releases. It has been for years. As you said, it doesn't improve the experience for the user. It's never about that, improving the experience for us, because that doesn't make us want to pay. Unless, of course, it's something like DLC for the Fallout series or Elder Scrolls, obviously, as you mentioned, because you have so much value in that base product that when they release those expansion packs to the story for Fallout 4, Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas, I quite happily purchase those because I got so many hours out of the base game that expanding that with new adventures, the further adventures of the Lone Wanderer and the Courier and the Soul Survivor, I was all about that. And if it's value for money, expansion packs, they're not a new thing either. But that's value for money, and most DLC recurrent revenue mechanics certainly aren't. So it is nice to see developers adhere to those old ways about just making the most fun game possible and not trying to milk gamers for every cent they have.
Exactly. I'd also want, before we get to the community responses to my mailbag question, I also want to point out that Dragon's Dogma 2 is getting killed on Steam because of this. it's at mostly negative. And this was an incredibly anticipated release. The original Dragon's Dogma game was incredibly popular, and there's a huge fan base for that game, and they were really excited to get their hands on a new version of it. And unfortunately, it's getting destroyed on Steam. I also want to point out that another reason why it's getting destroyed on Steam is because the game basically is poorly optimized for both PS5 and for Steam. It can't hit 60 FPS. From everything I'm reading, it's basically capped at 30 FPS. There's like an uncapped option, but it's not stable, kind of like Final Fantasy 16, which is another PS5 title. And I made a post about this on X, Andrew. It is mind-blowing to me that we got to the new gen of PS5 and, Series X and S and whatnot, and we can't, and there's many new releases for these new consoles that are having major issues with their frame rate,
I think
with their
Starfield is one of them as well,
optimization.
yeah.
So yeah, there was Starfield, Final Fantasy 16, Dragon's Dogma 2. I've seen many other titles, and they're basically capped at 30 FPS. And any uncapped option that are in these games, it like fluctuates between like 30 and 45 FPS, and it's basically a crap show. Like I bought my brother Final Fantasy 16 for PS5, and he couldn't use the uncapped version because the frames are constantly dropping. There's no consistency, so he had to turn it to 30 FPS. I can't believe that developers of these, from AAA companies for these major titles, for these long-standing series sometimes, et cetera, how they are okay with in 2023, 2024, 2022, et cetera, releasing these games for the newest hardware in 30 FPS. Like, that's not smooth. We should be far beyond that at this point. It's really rough. It's basically constant stuttering. That's what it looks like. Well, as you and I know, especially you, when you got your Elgato, right, and you started recording, games like NBA 2K6, 60 FPS is butter,
Yes,
right?
yes.
It's super smooth. And it really does, when a game is released at 30 FPS, it really hurts the visual appeal.
Live
So
06.
I did, yeah, like Live 06, right, in Live 07 for Xbox 360.
Although
But
Live 07 could be 60 FPS and it wouldn't make much of a difference, to be honest.
right, because that gameplay is just piss poor, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no turning that
There's
one
no
around.
saving that, yeah.
Let's put, yeah, that one's over. But anyway, that I wanted to make that point that it is really surprising that, devs are okay with 30 FPS games on these major titles, in 2023, 2024.
Kind of disappointing when this is next gen tech and this was something that was supposedly done away with, you'd think for good, in the mid to late 2000s. That's when everybody was going to 60 FPS in their games. So, well, certainly earlier as well, and even the Super Nintendo runs at 60 FPS as well. Hopefully they don't make 60 FPS uncapped DLC. That's going to be the next thing. You have to pay extra to have the game run properly. Again, don't want to put ideas in anybody's heads, especially the suits. But suffice to say, this game will have to, that we're, this hypothetical game we're talking about will have to be 60 FPS on top of everything else.
Exactly. Yeah, they can't go any lower than that.
So let's get to the community responses now. Once again, the question that Derek posed was, if a basketball game was released with no NBA license, but had solid gameplay and creative players and teams, uniform, stadium, court creator, community uploads and downloads, and deep franchise customization at that price point of $39.99 US, would you be interested? And a lot of people are, Derek. A lot of people said yes, absolutely. Such as God of Sonder, the Cobra Gaming says, with that much customization, yes, definitely. Teddy Bear the Gamer, another vote for absolutely. Railhouse says yes. Jordan Kobe Wade says yes. Steven the Live King says, can't say no to this. We need an alternative, as long as the gameplay is smooth and customizable, which is what we've been talking about. We know how much the Live King loves his sliders, and again, the need for that alternative. That's the key word here.
Yeah, and I think sliders are an important part of a scenario like this, right? Because when you're talking about creating teams and players, leagues, et cetera, you want to be able to tailor your gameplay to the type of league that you're creating. So, yeah, I would hope that if somebody jumped on this, like a dev team jumped on it, that sliders would be included.
The architect says it would have to have unlimited creator teams so I can make the perfect college game. And yeah, you really need to have that in-depth customization, as you said. You couldn't just say you can create 50 players and 10 teams. That's not going to cut it.
Imagine the NCAA mods that would be created and shared.
Incredible.
There's still that love for college basketball, you know, for college sports in general. Look at the excitement around the new EA Sports NCAA football game. So yeah, I would be checking in daily on the shared server for that game to see what rosters people were uploading. And I know for a fact there'd be people jumping all over NCAA mods.
And some more support for the idea. Centrix, 110%. Professor says, absolutely, it's time for an alternative. The Cyber Athlete says, sold. Caleb Swint says, it would be hard to believe, but I hope it happens. Philly and Gregorio, they both say yes. Mr. MVO also agrees with them. Fake Kyrie Jersey, also in favor of the idea. First Baseman says, I'd support it if the customization, its tools, and the gameplay are solid enough to convince me and NBA fans to look past the lack of licensing for the overall package. The game would also need to convince me, slash the audience, to trust the process in terms of an overall vision. And that goes back to what Tillhouse was saying, getting people on board and being willing to see it through as it develops.
Can I just say that the Cyber Athlete might be the coolest Twitter name, slash X name, that there is? So whenever I hear the Cyber Athlete, Andrew, I think of Antoine Walker in NBA Live 99. And the EA Sports promotions for their sports games at the time. If you remember correctly, there was the ad where it's like, big, big, big. And then it goes, wake up and smell the competition. They're showing Antoine Walker in NBA Live 99, Fight Night and Madden, et cetera. That just takes me way back, the Cyber Athlete thing, because that was an EA marketing push at the time.
T says if it had a park mode to play it with friends, he'd be into it. Maxi's Step Back 3 says, I play Rec with my player, so to be honest, the licensing means little to me. And that's an interesting point, but obviously with my career and its connected modes and my player builds, normally we still select NBA animations. So I think you'd still have to have something based on NBA moves.
I don't think you'd have to have something based on NBA moves. I mean, obviously some of the animations are going to be similar because it's basketball, right?
Sure.
But it doesn't have to be exactly Steph Curry's shot, or it doesn't need to be named Steph Curry's shot. Like, what is Steph Curry's team going to sue this new basketball game because there's a shot that's similar to his? You know what I mean? Like, but doesn't have his name behind it. So I think that you can still get a lot of those basketball animations in, you know, like all the different shooting forms, different, you know, dribbling moves, all of that stuff, without infringing on, you know, like copyright and stuff like that. So, I think that's, that would be the biggest challenge, in my opinion, actually, of this game, is how do you make a game that has all this customization that I'm talking about? You know, probably overall a smaller development team, but I would hope that a bigger development team would also be willing to tackle something like this. But how do you make an appropriate player build feature and a sort of like a career mode that people can get engaged in? And then how do you make the matchmaking, you know, fair and whatnot? So, because like a lot of the comments stated, pretty much 90 to 95% of the responses to my mailbag question were favorable to the idea, right? They would pay $40 for this game. But there were also many of those comments or people stating that they would want to take this game online, right? And be able to play with other gamers and be able to build a player and all of that stuff. So that would honestly be the biggest challenge when it comes to this new game.
I mean, there are some people who are not that fond of the idea. RB Coach Bry shared a GIF. I'm not sure which show that is, but guy shaking his head, not interested. DJ Thirst says it would need a gimmick. Over-the-top animation, street ball, 3-on-3 tournament, like NBA Street and one NBA Jam, something that would make it unique. Justin says, I assume you mean in the vein of Axis Football or Maximum Football, as you mentioned. The NBA license isn't exclusive, so it would be a studio and or publisher who couldn't afford to license, therefore wouldn't have the budget for a really good effort. People will just realize how good the gameplay NBA 2K is when you dedicate hundreds of people and millions of dollars to game development. And I see that point, that if they're not going for the NBA license, I mean, presumably this is a conscious choice, wanting to make a customizable sandbox game, but yeah, I mean, I suppose most developers who go without the NBA license are probably not going to have the budget to make a great AAA game. I see where he's coming from there.
Yeah, I just don't think NBA 2K24's gameplay, Andrew, is that strong. and I've said the reason why. And I think that there's just so many bugs with that gameplay. There's so many issues with it that make the user super frustrated. And the game overall is just not fair to the gamer. So I don't agree with, you know, the majority of people saying, oh, well, NBA 2K's gameplay is so great. And this is just a reminder of how great it is, because I think that the 2K fatigue is there. And I think that the gameplay is frustrating for a lot of people, even right down to something as simple as shooting. We've talked about this before. Majority of people are incredibly frustrated with the shooting mechanics in NBA 2K24, right? And I think that how many shots go up a game, Andrew, right? Between both teams and whatnot. So I think that that's just kind of a testament to the issues with the gameplay in, you know, 2024. But yeah, I think that to his other point, where he said smaller dev team, I've played some games on Steve from indie developers. There's one that I'm actually playing right now with my brother called Atlas Fallen. And the graphics on this game are very comparable to some, you know, true PS5 titles. And the animations are ridiculously good, from your character to the enemies, all of that stuff. The scenery is just unbelievable, you know, drop dead gorgeous sometimes. And, you know, there's another game that I played called Outward, which was also created by an indie developer. And that game has unbelievable visuals and some awesome animations as well. I do not think that it's impossible for an indie developer to, you know, with at least a big enough dev team, to have the right minds on the project to really focus on strong animations and good graphics and everything. I don't think it's impossible that an indie developer couldn't make a game like this.
And again, we had a lot of people saying that they would be absolutely interested. Same as our Facebook page, Martin, Royce, Max, for sure. Yes, absolutely. Sounds good. Lots of people in favor of the idea. There is an observation here from Henry on X, says, you should probably look at what happened between the Pro Evolution Soccer and FIFA franchises. One had much better graphics and gameplay, but no major licenses. One had subpar graphics and gameplay, but all the licenses. Guess who won? Point taken.
Big difference, though. Yeah, no, there's a big difference, though. In Pro Evolution Soccer, you didn't have all of that customization. From what I know of, you didn't have the ability to create teams, create leagues, all of that stuff, and then, you know, share all of that content and whatnot. I'll have to look into Pro Evolution Soccer again. But that's apples and oranges, right? Because you got to remember that the big draw to this game that I'm talking about has to do with the community involvement with roster creation, league creation, sharing, all of that stuff. So I'll look a little bit more into Pro Evolution Soccer, but I don't believe that that has that ability like we were talking about, that, you know, Maximum Football has, Access Football has, etc., to, you know, that full customization suite. Yeah, like I just want to say that again, that's apples and oranges if Pro Evolution Soccer does not have that ability.
And of course, people are desperate for an alternative in the basketball gaming space, so there's going to be interest there for that reason, if nothing else.
Exactly.
And jumping over to the NLC Discord for a few more responses, Maz, she says, hell yeah, Super Mega Basketball. Super Mega Baseball is pretty much exactly that, and people love it. Excellent core gameplay there. Murat, aka Badger, says, as long as it has no security protections on any of the files, I would love it, to be fair. And yeah, as obviously you're envisioning a lot of in-game customization, Derek, but on PC we would absolutely want to mod it, and we wouldn't want to have those files protected and locked down and not moddable. Ideally, we'd want them to be very modder-friendly.
Again, we're talking about something where all gamers on console and PC have these customization features, right? I'm not talking about modding in the sense of somebody having to go into Blender and create a cyberface, right? I'm not talking about somebody having to go into Photoshop, go into, you know, Blender, go into Paint.net, go into GIMP, etc., and to create art for the game and create courts. I'm talking about a customization suite built in to the game that everybody can access, which, Andrew, honestly, that would get way more people on board. It's not even close to as hard, and it would allow everybody to get involved in these creations, right? And I think that that point needs to be understood too. This isn't like a UBR situation or a URB situation or discussion. This is everybody can do it, right?
That's
You don't
true.
need the red MC, et cetera. And I think that that's just would be one of the big draws. And I want to point out there was a game called AO International Tennis that came out for Steam, and it allowed you to create, you could create like 500 players and then share your player roster and everything. And the face creator in this game was so in depth and so good that you could create somebody who looked just like John McEnroe or Michael Stich, or, you know, players missing in the game like Novak Djokovic, etc., and then share them with people. But it didn't stop there. You could also create stadiums. So they didn't have the license for the U.S. Open, but people went in and created an accurate representation of the U.S. Open and then shared that court. And what happened? So AO International Tennis was developed by Big Ant Studios. And at the time, they weren't as big. They were just like this small indie developer. I don't even think they had that many people working on their game. But I created a John McEnroe for that game, Andrew, and it had tens of thousands of downloads for this indie developer. And if there's tens of thousands of downloads for that one player, how many people were actually playing this game, right? How many people bought this game? And why did they buy this game? They bought this game because of the customization features, right? So there's some proof of concept there, even with a tennis game. So that's the point that I wanted to make.
I was going to say that's a pretty good proof of concept for that audience, for sure. And yeah, having those in-game tools. I once opined in an article that I thought that was going to be the future of modding, having those tools in-game. And I still feel that way. If we could ever get the rebranding options out of my NBA, out of my league, into the main roster editing. I'm guessing it's not available because the NBA is probably a bit iffy about letting people completely rebrand the game at will outside of a franchise mode save. But if we could get that functionality in basic roster editing outside of those franchise modes, yeah, that goes a long way to making those custom rosters.
And what happens there too, that also eliminates the I'm going to sell the roster, right? It eliminates the monetization piece because everybody can do it,
yes.
Right? So one of the problems we have in the modding community, not just in basketball video games, but in other, you know, PC games and whatnot,
is people,
exactly. People locking their creations behind paywalls. You have people, you know, creating Facebook groups where they, if I get 500 likes, I'll release this, but you still have to pay $9.99 for the roster mod, stuff like that.
And tools charging for tools.
Selling tools, exactly. So I think, like I said, the biggest draw of a game like this is that console gamers, PC gamers alike, have all of these tools, this creation suite at their disposal.
And finally, Carolus XCI says, hell yeah, I would pay even more than that. I'd rather pay for a fun gameplay experience than for the NBA license itself. I mean, again, that just shows the interest that some people have in having that great basketball experience, especially if it is so customizable.
And he's a modder, too. Like, he's somebody that would dive right into that creation suite. I know his work over the years. If I remember correctly, he created an amazing NBA 2K17 cheat table, and I think one that I still use, etc. So he would be all over the customization, and he would also play the game.
So thank you to everybody who responded. Again, there are some people who are skeptical, understandable, people who are looking at the business side of things and the feasibility, also something to keep in mind, obviously, but it is such an intriguing idea. You know, I go back to World League Basketball, how much I enjoyed that, even without all those customization features, Derek. If we had that same kind of experience, plus that customization, I'm going to give it a look.
Oh, absolutely. I would buy that game on day one, to be honest with you. But I got to stress again that the gameplay would have to be fun and smooth and solid and in order to show out properly on social media, whether it was an early access or it was a preview of the game, because it has to turn heads, in my opinion, early on in order to gain enough buzz where more people get on it, more people start creating rosters, they start sharing rosters, then more videos go up, etc. So once again, like I stated at the onset of this segment, I want to thank the basketball gaming community for just consistently responding to these mailbags week in and week out. And you have a lot of great ideas, and you're obviously passionate about basketball gaming. And I really appreciate your participation.
And of course, keep that conversation going on social media, in our Discord, and in our forum. With that being said, that has brought us to the end of this week's show. As always, we thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week, either on the NLSC, nb-live.com, our YouTube channel, or your podcast app of choice. In the meantime, please connect with us on social media. That's where you can get in touch with us and, of course, stay up to date with all of our content. So, Derek, go ahead and plug the handles.
You can reach me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at D43G and at D4384. You can also reach me on YouTube, D43, and on the NLSE, D43.
As for me, I'm Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on X. The NLSC is on X and Facebook at the NLSC. We're also NLSC Basketball on Instagram and Threads. We're on YouTube at NBA Live Series Center. And of course, give a look to the NLSC itself, nb-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. So, thank you once again for tuning in, and until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.